For almost 2,000 years, the Catholic Church has pointed the way towards salvation through Jesus Christ. For each of us, that journey starts in darkness, as if in a cave. Or in the words of Paul, at present we see indistinctly, as in a mirror, but then face to face. We invite you now to come with us as we seek wisdom and truth by way of faith and reason with your guides Mark Tuttle and Timothy O'Donnell. Join us in the Catholic Cave. Welcome once again to the Catholic Cave. I'm Kent Blanford. In the cave with me, two of the most intelligent cave dwellers you're ever going to run across, Mr. Timothy O'Donnell and Mr. Mark Tuttle. This weekend, Indianapolis hosts the NCYC, the National Catholic Youth Conference, 20,000 high school students in town. Gentlemen, if I were to challenge you to introduce these 20,000 students to philosophy and Catholic thinking, where would you start?
I think I'd start by running.
Yeah, that's a tall order. That's a very tall order. But no, there are a lot of... it's hard to choose, though. It's like walking into... If you like chocolate and like walking into a... gourmet chocolate confectionery and saying, okay, which one's your favorite? And it's like all of them, you know?
Right.
So there's so many. So just, I guess we should preface it, right, Mark, by saying, hey, whatever we do discuss here on the program, it's not a complete or exhaustive list. By definition, with the time constraints, we're going to leave a lot of people out.
And not only that, you know, I think your chocolate analogy is apt because a lot of it is based on personal preference. You know, when you talk about philosophy, you're talking about thinking through the great issues and really using reason as a tool to come to truth. And so in a lot of ways, it's idiosyncratic, depending on who you are, where you come from. Everybody philosophizes. Everybody starts philosophizing, and you start philosophizing even before you're a teenager. And so a lot of it's going to depend on where you've started, where you've come from, what kinds of things you're thinking about as to what's going to appeal to you to kind of continue on that road, because nobody is just starting fresh on the road towards philosophic thought.
Right. So philosophy, the love of wisdom. So... let me tee it up. You have five daughters, Mark.
I do, yes.
So, and you're a philosophy geek. So,
meant in the best of ways.
Correct. And so, where did you start, or have you started with, say, your oldest daughter?
Yeah, my oldest daughter is actually very philosophically inclined. She loves the humanities. She's involved in one of the great books programs. Angelicum Academy, which is loosely affiliated with Holy Apostles Seminary with Dr. Redpath that we've had on the show several times. So,
Ignatius Press is in there somewhere too. Yeah.
And, you know, honestly, all great philosophy starts in a dialogue. You know, Plato, great philosopher, kind of laid it out that you can't philosophize in a vacuum. You can't philosophize by yourself. You need somebody else. That's why we've got this show set up the way we do. Philosophy is meant to be done in dialogue back and forth. And, you know, it's a progression that in some ways never ends. And so we started that, when she was a little kid, just honestly with nature walks, talking about nature, talking about what she sees, talking about where things go, because ultimately philosophy is kind of an offshoot of the natural sciences. You're looking for truths. And so starting with the natural truths and what the natural truths are, that's probably the best place to start.
Okay. Well, that's awesome because, right, we want to take in, we're taking in sense data, so from our five senses, and then we're apprehending reality, and we're trying to make sense of it, right? To ascend in both knowledge and understanding,
right?
To ultimately reach to wisdom. So let's throw out the names of some. Let's start throwing out some names of some books, maybe that might be, or authors, or
right. The first real philosophy book I recommended my daughter was Sophie's World by Justine Gardner. That's a great intro to philosophy. It's a novel. It's written almost as a kid's novel, and it is a great survey of the great thinkers of the past. So you know the character. the main character gets a letter from her father, who Justine Gardner is a Norwegian author. So her father is serving in the UN troops that are there in Beirut at the time,
okay,
in Lebanon. And so she gets a letter from him, and it starts off this sort of adventure story that she keeps getting letters from him, that, you know, the mystery sort of unfolds through a lesson and survey of Western philosophy. So it's a great intro. It's a fun read. It's a fun book. And my daughter still holds on to her copy of Sophie's World as if it's a dear treasure to her. So it's a good place to start.
Well, and that's the sign of a great book. Great books are the kind that you can read over and over and over again and still profit from them, still find new insights, and the author still has new things to say to you, and different points in our life. You can read, different texts will strike us differently. You brought up this notion of conversation and entering into a dialogue. What about Plato? What are your thoughts there?
You know, I think Plato is a very good place to start. Plato's dialogues are fairly accessible. They're fairly easy to understand.
In English, though, you're saying, right?
Yeah. Okay. I wouldn't start right away with the ancient Greek. But, you know, you can get there pretty...
Depending on the child, there's gifted kids.
Exactly. You can get there pretty quickly if you're really so inclined. But
they're great English translations.
Right, exactly. Right. The English translations of... right. And I wouldn't necessarily start with... the Republic. I would start with something, you know, a little more, I think, accessible. The Euthyphro is not a horrible one to start with. It deals with some religious questions, and so it may need some parental guidance dealing through some of the questions that are raised by the dialogue. But that one's fairly accessible. Socrates is fairly personable in that one, they have the benefit of being relatively short. So
exactly.
You don't have to dedicate months and months and months of study to read one of Plato's dialogues.
Yeah, and he sets a template by which much of education has followed, which is this raising and answering the right set of questions, right? And that leads to what the truth of things.
Right. Plato's method is still, I think, one of the preferred methods for getting at philosophical truth of, that whole Socratic dialogue of sort of a structured set of questions that lead closer and closer to philosophical truth.
Yeah, and one discovers the truth of things, right? And so that relationship, just to remind everyone, the relationship in order is you have Socrates comes along first, and then his star pupil is Plato. Plato's star pupil is then Aristotle. And so when you read Plato and you read his dialogues, meaning this conversation, that's how he writes. It's his main character's off. Plato's main character often is his Socrates, his teacher. That's who he uses as his main character. And Socrates then encounters misunderstandings, and people have misunderstandings. And so he begins to, through this, raising answering questions leading to the truth, and raises very important moral questions, questions that still have perennial, or I would say eternal value around things. Like one of the basic questions that are raised are things intrinsically good in and of themselves, or are they good because we say they're good? And so he wrestles with questions like that, because how does that pertain to us today? Well, it pertains to us today because think of the value we place on human life. As Catholics, we claim, I think rightfully so, we have a truth claim that all human life is valuable, intrinsically valuable. It's valuable because of what it is, not because of what people can do or its characteristics. So that you can trace, you can find the beginnings of that thought pre-Christian in Plato raising some very important questions.
Yeah, you know, I think that raising of questions leads to another great philosophical reading tool. That probably a lot of the teenagers at NCYC are very familiar with, and that is the UCAT. the youth catechism that's been put out there, it raises those questions in a form that makes them accessible and makes them available for continued discussion and for exploring some of these ideas. And it's not just theological, it's philosophical as well.
And there's I think Ignatius Press is the publisher. And they have different versions of it now. I was on their website not too long ago. I mean, they had the regular UCAT, like you mentioned, which is short for Youth Catechism. But then they also have one that's geared a little differently towards confirmation. So it's got a little slightly different content. I also like, and there's a third version, I forget exactly, but there's another version of it too. So they're styling them to meet different target audience and needs of those audiences. And the presentation is really strong. It has that wonderful combination of, solid Catholic doctrine that's not watered down, but in a contemporary type format or something that's appealing. And then they have the visuals throughout the text is also, I think, very, very helpful because, picture's worth a thousand words, and they have the right kind of, they use the right kind of illustrations and photographs in there.
Yep. You know, along the same lines, going back to some of the biblical texts as well, particularly Ecclesiastes, that's got a certain appeal to teenagers that I think as you get a little bit older, it kind of rubs off a little bit. But I remember sitting down as a teenager, and I might have been strange, and really, really...
I think we can use the present tense as well as past tense
on
that one.
But really being taken in by Ecclesiastes and thinking through the questions and dilemmas that it raises of, is everything vanity? And, where does true meaning come from? What is the purpose of life? All those questions get raised by the book of Ecclesiastes. And that's another good sort of entree, I think, into philosophy, even though it comes through the Bible. I think that, and for a teenager that may not necessarily be particularly churchy, I guess, that might be a little off-putting, but... it does lead to good, solid philosophical thought.
Yeah, I agree. I'm glad you brought that one up. In fact, you can look at the table of contents of most Bibles, and they're the Bible's full of different genres and collected over time. And there's one of the main sections or genres in there is the wisdom literature. So that is a great entree. I'm going to throw us back in not back in time, on a different track though. So. We talked about Socrates a little bit. We talked about Plato. What do you think? I know where I stand on this one. Aristotle.
Aristotle, I think, he's good to learn, but he's not exactly the most accessible for a young person just starting off. I think I would read more about Aristotle rather than reading Aristotle directly.
I have a suggestion. Mortimer Adler, who's one of my 20th century heroes, philosophers, he has a book called Aristotle for Everybody. And that is a great short introduction to the works. Yeah, I agree with you. You do not want to start by picking up Aristotle in his even a collected works or much less his complete works, because what we have from Aristotle is extremely valuable. However, I think most literary critics agree that what's been handed on through time are really more of his lecture notes, and he sat down to write a novel, right, or a textbook or something like that. So lecture notes can be different. And again, we're recommending people can start with English.
Yeah, I think the other thing that makes Aristotle a little bit harder to get at is he is the father of logic. And so
I got an answer for that though too.
Most of his works are put out in a not necessarily a familiar format that most readers would be. It's put out in a very philosophically logical order, and so that can be a little you need a little bit of orientation to be able to kind of decipher that.
Well, gentlemen, the logical order right now says it's time for us to take a break, and we'll be back with more of the Catholic Cave right after this.
Three things keep Catholic Radio Indy on the air. One is our fervent desire to spread the gospel message. Two is your donations to the station. We couldn't survive without them. And three is underwriting from area businesses. Every month, these businesses make donations to the station. Please support them. Visit their stores, send them an email, or call them. Let them know that you appreciate their support of Catholic Radio. It's a great way to thank our underwriters for their very important support.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. I'm Timothy O'Donnell with my co-host, Mark Tuttle, trusty sidekick, Kent Blanford. And today we are sharing ideas, suggestions, recommendations on books of philosophy, Catholic philosophy, philosophy in general, and Catholic theology. So how can we get at that subject matter with our intended audience, primarily being we're trying to speak to the youth who are in town from all around the country and some from outside of the country in for NCYC this weekend. So welcome to Indianapolis. Welcome to the Catholic Cave. Mark, when we right before break, we were bringing up Aristotle, and Aristotle really, in a lot of ways, is credited with the founding of formal logic. Now, that can be daunting, as you said, and maybe not the neither one of us would say, hey, but, let's just start with that.
Yeah, you know, somebody who's new to philosophy or interested in philosophy, and you hand them a copy of Posterior Analytics, that's probably not going to
fly. That's probably the end of it. That's probably the end of that. They're moving out of something. They're all moving over to history or something, biology or something. But there is a wonderful Catholic author who has a very special gift for taking complicated philosophical and theological concepts and principles and putting them in much more accessible layperson type thing. And that is someone you and I both admire, which is Dr. Peter Kraft.
Right. Yeah. And he is an Aristotelian himself, self-avowed.
Yes.
And so he does make Aristotle very accessible through a wide variety of different books. Some of the best books, I think, for intro to philosophy and intro to particular philosophers are a series of books he wrote that all start with Socrates meets so-and-so. So my favorite of the bunch. You want to guess what my favorite of the bunch is, Tim?
Okay. I'm going to say Socrates meets Kant.
That's exactly right. How on earth did you get that one? Because Kant,
you and those crazy German
right. Kant's another one of those philosophers that he's a little hard. He's a little inaccessible.
Yes, he
actually
is.
I would say he's even more inaccessible than
Aristotle. Yes, I would agree.
When I was
think of a Critique of Pure Reason by Kant.
Right, exactly.
Good Lord.
Yeah. And, he wrote in German, and a lot of the scholars of Kant will read him in translation, either English or French, because the translator has already had to go through the effort of trying to figure out what he's saying.
Right. Yeah, he's already had to kind of simplify it to a certain extent, right?
Exactly.
That's a great point. Yeah, Peter Kraft. So it's pronounced Kraft, but it's spelled K-R-E-E-F-T. And I know he's been in Indianapolis before, but he's got probably 60 different books that he's written. He did teach for many, many decades at Boston College, and he may still be teaching there or closing in on retirement age. But he's written on a wide range of issues. One of the other ones that I really recommend of Peter Kraft's book, again, is sort of an intro to one of the tougher questions, which is about suffering. And he has this book called Making Sense Out of Suffering. And as Catholics, we have a very, very good response to how can a loving God allow suffering in the world. And his book, I think, is probably the single best handling of that topic that I've read.
Yeah, the question of suffering, the question of pain and misery within the world is one of the starting points for philosophy. And I think it comes up not only, within the history of philosophy as one of the first questions, but I think in the life of an individual, it's one of the first questions that gets asked of why is life sometimes difficult? Why are there obstacles to goals, etc.? And wrestling that question is often, I think, some of the first philosophical questions that someone asks themselves. So, somebody like Peter Kraft, the guide's that. Another great guide to that line of questioning of suffering is C.S. Lewis.
Absolutely, yeah.
C.S. Lewis was a man who he dealt with a lot of suffering in his life, both personally and also vicariously. He lived during he lived during World War II in England.
He served in World War I.
Yeah, and he saw the suffering that both of those wars created, and so a lot of his writings, particularly The Problem of Pain, deal with that.
An excellent treatment.
And once again, he's an essayist, and so the way he writes is very accessible. He writes in a way that I really think most teenagers would have no problem understanding and being drawn into to what he writes. Obviously, a lot of youth are familiar with his Chronicles of Narnia series, and that's also not a bad intro to some of the philosophical questions. I mean, they bring up certain questions
Absolutely.
Throughout the plot. So, you know, a guided read with a parent is, once again, a very good way to start bringing up some of these questions and start thinking through some of these issues.
Yeah, his space trilogy is another great allegory for the faith. As you get a little bit older into your teens, you might want to turn towards, I would recommend, obviously, Mere Christianity. Screwtape Letters when you're a little bit older, because it approaches from the side of a fallen angel. So that's can be scary for younger kids. So you might hold that one off till later, later in high school, even upper class high school. But I would also say, though, his most philosophical writing, this again might be a little bit of a stretch, so again, maybe young adults, would be Miracles. So his book, Miracles, really contends with the natural order of things and how God can suspend those laws to perform a miracle. And it's one of his, I would say it's his, again, it's probably his most philosophical book and therefore maybe one of his harder ones. But he's got a full range. Abolition of Man is another super accessible, very poignant book for our times.
Both Miracles and The Abolition of Man, I'm glad you brought those up, because those are a great example of how this intro to philosophy from one of these books leads you on, I guess you could look at it negatively as a rabbit trail, or it leads you on to other thinkers. So, you know, these questions don't come up in a vacuum. As I mentioned, you know, Plato started off the road as philosophy being a dialogue. And so all of these books are participating in an extended dialogue that reaches back to ancient Greece.
Yes.
And so Miracles is really answering a set of questions that was brought up by Enlightenment thinkers like John Locke and Hume and some of the skeptics. They brought up a series of questions, and so C.S. Lewis is responding to those in his book, Miracles. And so as you start to read it, you start to wonder, well, you know, I wonder what Locke really had to say. And you go back and you read Locke's treatment of miracles or Hume's treatment of miracles. And then, you know, they in turn are responding to people before them. And so you start to kind of build by, you know, here's one person's set of answers to another person's set of questions. Well, where did those questions come from? And you very quickly get immersed, I think. And I think that's how most of us who are, continuing on, I guess, a philosophical track in our lives in some capacity, that's really how we got started. We read one thing that led to another series of questions and to another series of questions. So here's the question, Tim.
Yes.
Where did you start? What was that initial question, or what was that initial book that started you off on your quest towards philosophical knowledge?
It was G.K. Chesterton. Orthodoxy.
Yeah, that's so, another great starting point for, Orthodoxy, maybe not as much as other ones for a teenager, but, still
a good
song.
I was geeky like that.
Yeah.
But I had a great parish priest who recommended that to me pretty early on, and, it was captive. A lot of it was over my head, to be honest with you, but it was enough to get me started, to put me in contact with this great intellectual tradition that you were just talking about. I think another book that actually encapsulates this dialogue that you're talking about, Mortimer Adler actually, and he has a co-author, Hutchins, and they were the ones who put together eventually the great books of Western civilization. But within that, an overarching component that's called The Great Conversation.
Right.
He brings up this whole, throughout all of, lived human history, people have been raising these questions about these great ideas and then agreeing and disagreeing with it over time. And we're called to enter into this great conversation about the most important things.
Yeah, Hutchins' essay, The Great Conversation, is where I start my classical symposium of Indianapolis.
There you go.
I teach a great books-based four-year program for high school students where we start with the Greeks, we go through the Latins and medieval and modern period over 4 years. And the very first thing that we start with is Hutchins' The Great Conversation, just to give an overview of this is what we're doing, this is what we're talking about, and this is why we're engaging in this.
And it's a fun book. It's almost like a tabletop book. And it's like 60 pages long or something like that. It's a great place to start. I'm going to roll back the clock, though, a little bit, because that's more of a 20th century. I'm going to bring up someone, whose work goes from something very accessible to the incredibly profound and complex, and that is St. Augustine. And so with Augustine, I think the best place to start is his book, The Confessions.
Yeah, I think The Confessions are a great, because that's his personal dialogue, his own personal inner dialogue. And so, on the one hand, it's incredibly personal, and it draws you in, and you get to know a great saint, and the inner workings psychologically of how this great man came to be such a fantastic Christian. But at the same time, it's also the inner dialogue of a master. And so by following that and you're following his line of reasoning as he's piecing through some of the great questions of, is there a God? What is God like? Is God personal? Does God love me? The question of miracles comes up in that. All of these questions come up, and by him giving us a great autobiography, we're able to kind of follow in his footsteps and in that way kind of learn a philosophical method of how to wrestle with these questions and how to go about thinking through them.
Yeah, and he's incredibly transparent and authentic. There's some of the most beautiful prose and prayers in there. But he also talks about mistakes that he makes,
Right.
And so I think it's very, very relatable. We can relate to what he's – even though – he's writing this, 1,600 years ago. It's as if it's happening now in a
right.
lot of ways.
One of my favorite parts of the Confessions is where he laments having to read Greek literature. And he, instead of wanting to read the classical Greek literature when he's in school, he wants to read the current Latin literature. And so
yes.
he really wants, and I picture the kids in class that they don't want to be reading they want to be reading Harry Potter. It's the same dilemma he's going
right,
through,
right, Right.
Yeah. Back in,
they don't want to read Plato.
Yeah,
they want to read Harry Potter. Right.
But yeah, the same same dilemma in 300 AD as the kids are dealing with now. Well, we are coming up on a break, but when we come back, let's talk a little bit more about where we would recommend somebody start if they're interested in theology or philosophy.
And we'll be back with more on The Catholic Cave right after this.
Think of all the media our young people are exposed to today. MTV, movies, what passes for entertainment on TV, song lyrics that are questionable or worse. Where do they hear the message that it's okay to be chaste and modest, or that it's not crazy to practice their faith, or to believe in a God who loves them and can forgive them no matter what they do? Catholic Radio is the answer. Be sure to tell your friends and relatives about Catholic Radio Indy.
Welcome back to The Catholic Cave. I'm Kent Blanford. In the cave with me, the familiar voices of Mr. Mark Tuttle and Mr. Timothy O'Donnell. Gentlemen, we've been talking about where do you start if you're a teenager or even a young adult, even an older adult. Where do you start if you decide you want to pursue a knowledge of philosophy, which is kind of in itself a redundant question? Knowledge, philosophy, it all goes together.
At least that's
yes, it does.
At least,
it should.
At least that's the hope,
But where do you start? Do you start with, the Summa? Or would that be jumping into the deep end?
You know, I think if somebody were interested in the thought of St. Thomas Aquinas, one place I would recommend is an author that we've already mentioned a few times, and that's Peter Kraft. He wrote a Summa of the Summa. And, you know, even that's a little bit thick.
Yeah.
But, you know, I at least it distills the ideas down to something that are a little bit more, I guess, digestible.
Yeah. So St. Thomas Aquinas, who is the gold standard for Catholic philosophy and theology, his magnus opus is the Summa Theologiae, Summary of Theology. And at his time, philosophy and theology were not two separate disciplines in the way that we think of them today.
Right. I had a philosophy professor that described it like a breath mint. He said, you know, if you have a breath mint, is the breath mint candy? Or is it
medicinal? Is
it right, exactly. And the answer
is... I think it depends on how bad your breath is.
Right. It's both.
Exactly.
Are you choosing it or has someone handed it to you?
Correct. And if they hand you two, you know you got a problem.
Right. But yes, you're right. St. Thomas is philosophy and theology as one, because the two disciplines were not separate, nor should they be separate. You know, I think we make an artificial distinction. I think we make a lot of artificial distinctions, but I think that's one of the big ones we make, in that the realm of human thought, human logic, and the realm of human anthropology, you know, who and what man are somehow distinct and able to be studied separately from who God is. You really can't divide those up.
Yeah. So I would say, I agree. So I would say at some point, it's in one's best interest to read the Summa. But it's a thick five-volume set.
Right.
And there are, in fact, a good friend of the show, honorary cave dweller, Dr. Jason Eberl, one of his books is a tour of the Summa to give us kind of a way to kind of navigate the broader text. But where I would suggest people start, because we do need to be familiar with Aquinas' work, absolutely. I would say two places, two authors I would recommend. One you're going to go absolutely bonkers for, Mark, so I'll save that for a second. First, I'll say Bishop Robert Barron's book, just called Aquinas. Very accessible, well-read, easy to read. Actually, I'm going to name three. The second one would be G.K. Chesterton's treatment.
I was just thinking that when you mentioned Aquinas.
I saw that on your right. face, and I stole it from
right.
you.
Yeah, because once again, you know, you talk about gold standards, and you know, I think G.K. Chesterton's biography, not only of Aquinas, but his biography of St. Francis.
Yes.
You know,
buy that in a single volume.
Yeah, those are kind of gold standards to a certain extent as well.
Absolutely. And then the last one, Edward Fazer has a book on Aquinas, which is also outstanding.
It is outstanding. Once again, it might be a little thick. It might be a little difficult for people to jump into. But
It's at the deeper end of the shallow end.
Now, I will tell you, too, for people who are a little bit more, I guess, acquainted with contemporary thought, modern thinking. So this would be, mm-hmm. you know, somebody that's been around the block a little bit philosophically, which there are teenagers that have.
Absolutely.
I mean, I have to be honest, my entree into philosophy.
Oh, yeah.
A friend and I sneaking away when we were in 10th grade reading Nietzsche. So, you know, that was...
that explains much. That explains
so
much.
There are kids like that. And I also, another great intro is another book by Edward Fazer, The Last Superstition.
About
atheism. And it is a very good intro to what is right about good philosophy and what is wrong about bad philosophy. So there's a good lesson in, once again, how to philosophize. If you notice, that's kind of a theme here, Tim, that as much as what you're reading, the reading something that leads you to how to read and how to think, I think, is incredibly important. And that leads me back to another good philosophical book, which is How to Read a Book.
Mortimer Adler,
exactly.
My hero.
Yeah. Adler's How to Read a Book is believe it or not,
it's indispensable.
It's indispensable, and it is a philosophical text. There's
absolutely.
No doubt about it. It's about epistemology and how you learn and how thought progresses and how you put things together. So that's another good book, and I would recommend anybody headed off to college that you read that first before you take your first college class.
Yeah, I agree. It sounds redundant or counterintuitive, you know, how to, a book called How to Read a Book. But what he's – the part of the brilliance of that book is he points us to the fact that different genres should be approached differently. So we approach great works of poetry different from – a meticulous historical account of events, which is different from, say, reading works of philosophy, which is different from reading, say, something from a hard science, and on. And so that, again, reading that book, How to Read a Book, is invaluable because by taking up the right approach and method based on the type of book that you're reading, you're going to get a lot more out of it a lot faster.
Right. And, you know, I would almost say that book and some of the other ones we've thrown out are more in line with advanced beginners. So, you know, if you take a kid to swim lesson, you wind up with the beginners, and then you've got the advanced beginners, which are kind of the next level up. And so How to Read a Book, that's probably in that advanced beginner stage. Another set of books that I think are a great intro to philosophy that are in that sort of advanced beginner stage are the classical history of philosophy books that were written by the Jesuit Frederick Copleston.
Ooh, fantastic.
I go back. I have a set of those on my bookshelf that I go back mm-hmm. to time and time again just to get the gist of what various philosophers through the ages had to say. And it's a great summary. It's very unbiased, but it is written by a Jesuit. So you do see the Christian veneer on it a little bit. But
I love that set, though. He's got... it's nine volumes. Some of them are smaller than others, more like novel size. But I like to recommend you still get them on Amazon, where you can get they're kind of put together into a three volume set. So one book is actually three books in one. The second is the next set of three, on, and you get all nine of them. And it's a full sweep from ancient Greek all the way up to where would you say it ends? I would say kind of, you know, just past the midpoint of the 20th century.
Exactly. Yeah. I was going to say early 20th century.
And each philosopher he treats is, what, maybe 8 to 10 pages, something along those lines. Right. So very, you know, again, but thorough. Think of it like Wikipedia before Wikipedia.
Right.
All in one place.
And just like Wikipedia, it's a great starting point. So he gives you clues and things to launch off from. He drops a lot of names of other texts, so you get the idea of what the major texts that these people wrote. And so you can go on and do further research after reading, you know, a brief little article about whoever you're interested in. And not only that, but he goes off the beaten path a little bit. One of my favorite philosophers is Eriugena, and I was shocked to find that Copleston actually deals with Eriugena, who was this 9th century monk in Charlemagne's court that actually knew and studied and had an acquaintance with ancient Greek, which was very rare for the time. So, and there he is, right there in Frederick Copleston. So,
that's fantastic. I want to bring up, too, given the theme of today's show, it almost goes without saying, but I got to bring up Tolkien, J.R.R. Tolkien's Lord of the Rings, both as a text, and actually the movies are not too bad either, the trilogy. Now, The Hobbit, I also like as a novel, but I can't say I fully endorse the long, drawn out. How many hours did they turn? I mean, it's a small book, and they turned that into what? Three-hour movies or something? Yeah, I don't know what it was. I fell asleep every time I went to it.
Yeah, the movie is quite the departure from the book. Yeah, the book itself, though, it's a fairly easy read. It's not too difficult and not too long and thick. And you're right, Tolkien brings out a lot of good theological topics. You know, he was Catholic, and there are theological themes that are woven into it that if you read it with Catholic eyes, I think it makes the text come alive, but mm-hmm. it also makes the faith come alive as well.
I agree. A couple of quick connections. I really like, going back to, we mentioned Peter Kraft. Peter Kraft has a book called The Philosophy of Tolkien, which is super helpful because Tolkien also has other works, Lord of the Ring being his most famous, well-known. But also in Lord of the Rings, one of the themes that ties directly back to one of Plato's dialogues, the Gorgias, is this idea of invisibility.
Right.
That there's a Plato writes about a ring of invisibility, which brings up the you think when Plato's writing, you know, 2,300 years ago, it basically means you know, if you could get away with anything, what would you do? So it speaks to, you know, raises the question of one's character. Am I good only when people are watching? Am I good only because there's negative consequences? Well, what if I remove, people can't see what I'm doing, they won't know what I'm doing, and therefore, and what if I remove negative consequences? Would my behavior choices change? Would it reveal something dark or some light in my character? And this again is a one of the themes that comes up with that penetrates Tolkien's work, Lord of the Rings.
Right, and Tolkien is a great example, I think, of a virtue ethicist. You know, somebody that talks, yes, and discusses about ethics in a way that's easier to understand, because rather than talking about it in flat terms of this is morally right or this is morally wrong, which
that's, you know, your guy Kant, that, right, no, there. That's the ontological, right, position.
It is. It is. And virtue ethics gets behind the scenes by avoiding that type of language and talking about virtue, talking about what's brave, or talking about what's cowardly, talking, right, about what is compassionate versus what's hard-hearted. And so, you know, through Tolkien's writings, you get a good set of, I think, discussions around virtue and virtue ethics.
We need to take a break, and we'll be back with more and a few more questions for these gentlemen right after this. Saturday is a different kind of day, so start it off right with Catholic Radio Indy's Saturday morning lineup. Forming Faithful Families at 9, I Choose Life at 9:30, Catholic Jukebox Indiana at 10, The Catholic Cave at 11, and two episodes of Faith in Action at noon. Every Saturday starting at 9 on Catholic Radio Indy. Did you miss something in this show or just want to hear it again? Podcasts of this and all our other great local programs are available 24/7 at CatholicRadioIndy.org. Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. I'm Kent Blanford. In the cave with me, Mr. Timothy O'Donnell, Mr. Mark Tuttle. We've been talking about the great literature that we would use to introduce someone to philosophy, to Catholic thought. And gentlemen, I'm going to give you a hypothetical question. At least I hope it's hypothetical, because I'd really hate to see this happen to either of you.
Uh-oh.
You are sent to a desert island for a period of 1 year.
Ooh.
You are allowed to take two books with you.
Uh-oh.
Which two books would you take?
Mm. Ah, so we're actually departing a little bit from you know, what you would recommend for somebody just starting off, because we've already talked about first thought is one that we've kind of said, you know, I'm not sure I would start there, but I would definitely take St. Thomas Aquinas's Summa Theologica with me. You know, that is a great book for daily kind of meditation, thinking through. You know, it pretty much covers just about every philosophical topic and every theological topic you can imagine in a very thorough way that not only goes through how St. Thomas is thinking about it and kind of the quote-unquote right answers to it, but it references back the whole history of philosophy up until St. Thomas. And so, you know, as you think through the answers and the objections, you start to think through what other people's answers were to these questions and how St. Thomas is differing from them. And so, you know, if I'm on a desert island for an extended period of time, I'm never going to exhaust that book.
Oh, yeah, especially if it were only a year.
right, exactly, yeah.
Okay, well, I'll throw one out, and then I'll turn it back over to you, Mark. Okay, I'm going to throw, all right, this one's going to be maybe a little predictable, but I'm gonna throw it out there anyway, and that is Dante Alighieri's Divine Comedy. So I think I would love to spend, if I had a year to really thoroughly go through the Divine Comedy. So he's got the three parts of Inferno, Purgatio, Paradiso. I think I'd really, you know, the great, and that is a great work of philosophy and theology.
But if you're going to take one of those with you, you've got to make sure you take one with very good endnotes and apparatus with it. Because,
Anthony.
Because you're only allowed one book. So, you know.
Correct. To Anthony Esselin's translation is the one I would take. So he's a great Catholic author, too. And in fact, I was going to bring up one of his books that. But
Dante's a little bit like St. Thomas Aquinas in that you really do have the whole history of thought there with you.
Correct.
As you're going through. And hence, you know, I'm not sure you could get away with just taking Dante with you without having to take a whole slew of other books to, to be able to kind of read along with it.
Okay. So what would be your second book?
My second book. That's a bigger, that's a tougher one. I'm going to let you go first on that one because I'm still trying to think through that. What's your second
book? Okay. This one's going to feel like a little off the grid, but I'm going to say Alexis de Tocqueville's Democracy in America.
That's a great one. Yeah. Yeah. That's a very good one. And, you know, we haven't talked a lot about political science and somebody that's politically minded of where their entree into philosophy would be. And that's a great suggestion. You know, that's Alexis de Tocqueville was a Frenchman that was visiting America, took multiple visits to America, and wrote down his reflections on how the New World, how this new experiment differed from France and the old world.
Yeah, and how the American Revolution quite a bit different, the results of which quite different from the French Revolution.
And, you know, I think along those same lines, probably one I would like to have with me, it may not be the second one, but definitely one that I would like to have with me, is another political book, and that's Russell Kirk's The Conservative Mind.
Ooh, yeah.
Because once again, you've got kind of a compendium of thought there, of conservative thought through the ages, a great political science book of not only kind of how to address things currently, but how great thinkers in the past have valued the permanent things and what those permanent things are and why those things are so important to society.
Bringing it back around to our students, of all the Catholic thinkers, we've mentioned Aquinas, we've mentioned St. Thomas. Who are the other great Catholic philosophers that you would recommend they pick up a copy of something they read, so a biography of this individual, something along those lines, to get to know Catholic thought?
For somebody that's philosophically oriented, in other words, they like to trace out their thoughts a little bit, St. Teresa of Avila's Interior Castle, I think. Mm-hmm. It's a spiritual work, so this is a spiritual journey that she's taking the reader on of how to purify yourself and purify your own soul. But there's a lot of philosophical, I think, action involved in it, a lot of philosophical guidance within it. And so, that would be one that I think everybody that's a little bit philosophically minded, especially a teenager, Interior Castle, I don't think you can go wrong with that one.
Well, as a teenager, I would say, even though it's going to be a stretch, I think a stretch, we may need to come at it from a different angle, but we've got to bring up St. John Paul the Great, and we've got to bring up his three, and St. Mark's like, that's maybe a little, well, I don't know. Here's what I would say. I would say the three to focus on are the gospel life, so Evangelium Vitae, Veritatis Splendor, the splendor of truth, and then Fides et Ratio, so faith and reason. So I like to call that as triptych.
those are some pretty hefty works, though. I'm not sure I would recommend those for a teenager.
I put it out there anyway because there are other, but you can you there are other people who have written and summarized his encyclicals, and then so they're like Spinello. Robert Spinello is one of them. And his book is called something like the Moral Wisdom of John Paul II.
Right.
And so there's ways at which you don't have to read those encyclicals directly, although I would say some of it's pretty accessible. But I think philosophically, we ignore St. John Paul the Great at our own peril. I mean, you have to either read him directly as a primary source in his own words, or through some others that have summarized his moral teaching.
Yeah, and I think the splendor of truth, I think you're right on with that one. The splendor of truth would be a great entree, I think, to Catholic thought, etc. So I think that's a good intro place not only to Catholic thought, but to the thought of John Paul II as well.
Yes, and then I would say another another place to go, another author I would say is Blessed John Henry Cardinal Newman. And where I would probably begin, it's not, again, strictly philosophical, but I actually would recommend beginning with his, there's a collected work of his sermons. And his sermons are, they're magnificent examples of English prose. They're soaked in sacred scripture and reference to scripture. They're indexed to the different readings throughout the liturgical year. And then they're profound, as you mentioned earlier, Mark, they're profoundly oriented towards wisdom with a capital W. And so that would be, I think, his sermons are a wonderful place for anyone to get very, very profitable reading of both faith and reason.
Yeah, another one that I would recommend, and he's not a saint, because he's still alive. Can't have a saint that's still alive. That's just going to. But
George, just small s.
Right, small s. But George Weigel's Letters to a Young Catholic, I think, is a fantastic entree point. You know, you mentioned the thought of John Paul II. Mm-hmm. Weigel was the great biographer of John Paul II. So a lot of John Paul II's thought is involved in that. But it's also the thought of a public American intellectual, and so it becomes very accessible, and it honestly is kind of his advice and his letters to young people as they're growing up within the contemporary Catholic Church.
That's a great example. I really have enjoyed reading. I met him a few times too. He's been to Our Lady of Mount Carmel. Let me give out one more shout out because I think it's also accessible, very accessible actually, and that is Dr. Edward Sree. And his latest book called Who Am I to Judge? Now, he's also coming in February to Our Lady of Mount Carmel. So go to OLMC's website and you can find out more information there. He's going to do a presentation on that very book. But Who Am I to Judge is his book on moral theology and philosophy. So that's really good. We have a subscription to Formed at our parish, and we'll actually be showing. He has a whole video series to go along with it, and we'll be showing that at our parish as part of our adult faith formation.
Right, and I would also recommend any of the classic sermons that, you know, a lot of them you can find in Liturgy of the Hours, but a lot of the sermons by St. John Chrysostom, a lot of the sermons by St. Augustine, those that show up, some of the sermons from St. Thomas Aquinas.
Absolutely.
They're very accessible. They're not written in hugely, high philosophical language, but they contain, the depth of great Catholic thought within them.
I'll put up one other one from an intro to, it's literally called Intro to Philosophy, and it's by Jacques Maritain. Now, Jacques Maritain was really, at least through the mid-20th century, considered one of the great Catholic thinkers of the 20th century. His wife was also a very prominent Catholic philosopher.
Actually, she's the reason he was a Catholic philosopher.
Right, exactly. In fact, their story, their biography is super interesting. But his book, Intro to Philosophy, is very helpful. I think a lot of his thought actually sort of gave the intellectual framework for the United Nations Declaration of Human Rights.
Exactly. A lot of that is very Catholic just because of Jacques Maritain and his influence.
Correct. And that's really good. And then I think the last person I'll mention, again, more contemporary, deceased not that long ago, his wife Sola, is Dietrich von Hildebrand, and his wife Alice von Hildebrand, her writings as well, especially on authentic femininity, the vocation to marriage, those are by her are very helpful. There's a recent book that came out by collecting Dietrich von Hildebrand's writings, and some of his speeches are him railing against Nazi Germany. And then, which he had to flee for his life. They were coming after him. Hitler, he's in Austria. And when they, when the Nazis took over Austria, he literally fled in the middle of the night, and he wound up in Fordham here in New York.
Right.
So that's another great, I would say, example of where you have it's a rare example, I think, of the contemporary setting of a great Catholic thinker pushing against a totalitarian system in very explicit terms.
Right.
All right. Well, gentlemen, I'd like to wrap it up with just my recommendation for youth as to exactly where they need to start to read to understand Catholic thought, to understand the philosophy of the world. And that's four authors: Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And
that's there you go.
That's all the time we have for the Catholic Cave for this week. Until next week, may God bless.
Thanks for joining us for this edition of The Catholic Cave. If you have a question or comment regarding this program, please address an email to Kent, K-E-N-T, at catholicradioindy.org or call 317-870-8400.